in my last t-shirt here. So. Right. And now to my last t-shirt. Not his fault. Okay, so what do we do? Where do we start? We have Bhagavad Gita. Are we in chapter 2 still? Chapter 2? So somebody like we read through the whole chapter. Is that right, gentlemen? And then discuss. All right, let me put my other glasses on. Then we're all done, we're going to take a picture, so be prepared to smile. Okay. I have a camera. Hare Krishna. Okay. All right. So do we chant the Sanskrit and the English? Is that what we do? Okay. So we should chant a little, Mangalachar. What did you want me to do?
Every day we have Bhagavad Gita, but we didn't know that you are taking Bhagavad Gita.
Oh.
We can bring our books. What should we do?
Yeah, yeah. Get your books. You need them. Everyone should have the Bhagavad Gita.
Already we have, but it's not
here. Right. In the meanwhile, we can review with those who are still here. But is that no one has books? All right. Bhagavad Gita is always.
This is starting point. From Bhagavad Gita, everything flows. Yeah. All right, we continue to review our verses. So, what is the alternative now? Krishna says that if you meditate on the sense objects, you can develop attachment for them and lust and so forth, and that's the path downward. So what's the next verse? On the other hand, oh, Brahman, let's begin. Raga Dvesha Vimuktais too.
It means, on the other hand, okay, by contrast, Raga Dvesha Vimuktais too. One who is free of raga and dvesha. Do we need any amplification in here? Can you just have it out there? Because it's kind of, I have a booming voice. I think I can be heard throughout this entire room. But if you can just put it so it goes out or whatever you do. Then. Okay, so everyone has a Gita now. Do we have enough Gitas? I know we have them. You don't have one.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, you just got it from the store. Okay. Okay, back we go. Okay, are we ready to chant? So do we do Sanskrit English, or just all Sanskrit, then all English? And then we read the English. Okay. So first we should do the Mangalacharan. Now everyone should know these verses at the beginning of the introduction. Om Agyanat Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Supadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagama Bhagunatam Vidhamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagama Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Panamami Haripriye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Behevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Go Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay, so let's run through chapter 2. Just just the Sanskrit, right? And then we'll do the English. General practice? No? But is it? Just,
we decide Sanskrit. English we don't always decide.
Oh.
Then we discuss, what we do is we decide Sanskrit and then we go watch our study. Then we study the English and then we study, we discuss about it. Like that.
Okay.
That's how we go about it.
Okay, well let's do the Sanskrit anyway. Sandeya Vacha. We don't do in unison?
Yes.
Okay, everyone. Sandeya Vacha. Tantata kataya vishtam ashupona kolekshanam vishidantam idam bhakyam uvacha madhusudana shri bhagavana vacha kutasva kashminam idam vishame samupastitam anayajishtam asvagyam akirti karamajana dvaibhyam masmagamakpata naitatva yupapadyate chudram viriyadavalyam Chakotishta Parantapa Katam Bhishmam Maham Sankhe Dronam Cha Madhusudana Ishubhi Patayoksyami Bhujaha Vadisudana Guru Nahatva Himahanubhavam Sheho Bhuktum Vaikshamati Aloke Hatvatakhanam Suguru Nihaiva Bhunji Habogan Hudira Pratignam Nachaitam dinma kaparam no gariyo Nirva jayema yadivano jayeyo Yane mahatva naki jivishamas Tevas kithata mukhe bhata rasa Kapanya dosho pahata svabhava Vrichyami tvam dharma samhura cheta Yakshve yakshyam nishkitam ruhitam me Shushyasteham sharimam tvam papanham Nahit papasyam imamapanunya yat chokam choshanam indriyanam avatabhuma vasapatnam ridham rajam soranam apicharipatyam Sanjayo vacha evamukvadishikesham gudakeshat parantapaha nayoksya iti govindam ukvatushnim babuvaha dhamavacha rishikesham Vahasan iva bharata Sena yodha bhyo mandhe Vishidhantam idam vataha Shri Bhagavana vacha Ashochanan vashochastvam Vajyavaram sabashase Katasuna katasumscha Nanashocham tipanditaha Datvevaham chatunasam Natvam nene janaripaha Natchayavanam avishyama Sarve vayamatakvaram Dehinos ninyata dehe, komaram yovanam jara, tata dehantara prati, virasatram namuhiyati. Matraspasha sukonteya, shitoshna sukadukada, agama paino nityas, tamsa tiksha svabharata. Yamhina vadiyam tete, purusham purusha shabha, samadukka sukham dhiram, Om Tadvaya Kaupate Bhavo Nabaho Vindyate Sataha Vayo Dabidrishtantas Svanayos Tatvidarshvihi Avinashi Tutan Vindhi Yena Saramidam Tatam Vinasham Vandiyasyasya Nakkashchit Kartamati Ambavam Vahime Deha Nityasyota Sharirinaha Anashino Praneyasya Tasma Vinyasva Bharata Yehenam Veti Handaram Yashtainam Manyate Hatam Ubhavdhana Vijanito Nayam Hanti Nahanyate Jayate Indiyate Vakadachin Nayam Bhutva Bhavitava Nabuhuya Ajo Nityakshashvato Yam Purano Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire Veda Vinashinam Nityam Yenam jambamyayam katam sapadashak pata kangati yadihantikam vasansi jinan yata vihaya dhavam nigrinnati nadoparani sata sharinan vihaya jinam gyangyani sangyati navani dehi nainam chindanti shastani nainam dhati pavakaha chinam kledhiyam tyapo nashochiyati marutaha Akshedhoyam madayoyam akleryo shosha evacha nityaksa vatakadakstanu अचलोऽयं सनातनः अव्यक्तोऽयमचिन्त्योऽयम् अविकारोऽयमुच्यते तस्मादेवम् विदिद्मायनम् नानुशोचितम् मनसि अतच्चैनम् नित्यजातम् नित्यम् वामम् निसेमृतम् तथातीतम् महाबाहो नायनम् शोचितम् आहसि जातस्य हि भ्रुवो मृत्यो ध्रुवम् जन्म मृतस्य च तस्मादपरिहायते तत्त्वम् शोचितमाहसि अव्याक्तीनि बुद्धानि व्यक्तमन्ध्यानि भारत अव्यक्तानन्दमानेव तप्तकापतिदेवना आश्चर्यवत् पश्यति कश्चिदेनम् आश्चर्यवन् वदति तथा गच्छाम्यः आश्चर्यवत् सैनमन्यक्षिणोति शुक्रासेनम् वै सेव कश्चित् देहि नित्यमवन्ध्योऽयम् देहे सर्वस्य भारत तस्मात् सर्वाणि भूतानि तत्त्वम् शोचितम् मानसि सदा मम विचारिक्ष न विकम्पितमासि तम् व्याधिगृह्णाक्षेयम् यत् शक्ति यस्य न विन्दते यद्निच्छया चोपपन्नम् स्वागन्वारमपावृतम् सुखिन क्षतया पात लभन्ते युद्धनीन्द्रशम् इमम् धान्यम् सङ्ग्रामम् न करिष्यसि ततः सदानम् कीर्तिम् च हित्वा पापमवाप्स्यसि अकीर्तिम् चापि भूतानि कथयिष्यन्ति देव्याम् सम्भावितस्य चाकीर्ति मरणादतिरिच्यते गुणादुपदतम् वंशम् ते महावता एषम् चोक्तम् बहुमतो उत्पायाससि लाघवम् अवाच्यवादांश्च बहून् वदिष्यन्ति तवाहिताः निन्दन्तस्तव सामर्थ्यम् ततो दुःखतरम् किम् अतो वा तप्स्यसि स्वर्गम् जित्वा वा भोक्ष्यसे महीम् तस्मदुत्तिष्ठ कौन्तेय युद्धाय कृतनिश्चयः सुखदुःखे समे कृत्वा लाभालाभ जय जय ततो युद्धाय युञ्जस्व नैवम् पाप्नवाप्स्यसि एषा ते विहिता सङ्ख्ये बुद्धियोगे त्रिमर्शिनो बुद्ध्या युक्तो यया पाप कामबन्धम् प्रहासिषि नेहाविक्रमनाशोऽस्ति प्रत्यवायो न विघ्नते स्वप्नमप्यस्य धामस्य रायते महतो भयात् व्यवसायात्मिका बुद्धिरेकेह कुटुनन्दन बहुशाकायनन्ताश्च बुद्धयो व्यवसायिनाम् यामिमाम् पुष्पिताम् वाचाम् भवदम् च विपश्यतः देववार्वतापात नान्यरस्तीति वादिनः कामात्मानः स्वर्गपरा जन्म कामपरपदा क्रियाविशेष बहुनाम् भोगैश्वर्य गतिम् प्रति भोगैश्वर्य प्रसक्तानाम् त्वया पतितचेतसाम् व्यवसायात्मका बुद्धिः समाधानो न विधीयते त्रैगुण्या विषया वेदा निस्त्रैगुण्यो भवादिना निर्द्वन्द्वो नित्यसत्त्वस्तो दीर्योगक्षेमात्मा यावानाथपुरपाने सौवतः सम्पृतोदके तावान् सर्वेषु वेदेषु ब्राह्मणस्य विजानतः कामयैवाधिकारस्य मा फलेषु कदाचन मा कर्म फलहेतुर्भो मा ते शुङ्गो स्वकामणे योगस्तत्कुलकर्माणि सङ्गम् चत्वादनञ्जय सिन्ध्यसिन्ध्यौ समो बुद्ध्वा समत्वम् योग उच्यते दूरेण यवरम् कर्म बुद्धियोगाद्धनञ्जय बुद्ध्या शरणमन्विच्छ कृपणा फलहेतमः बुद्धियुक्तो जहातीय उभे सुकृति दुष्कृते तस्माद्युङ्गाय युञ्जस्व योगः कर्म सुखासनम् बुद्धियुक्ता हि फलम् जग्वामनीषिणः जन्मबन्धविनिमुक्ता पदम् गच्छन् च नानयम् यदा ते मोहकलिलम् बुद्धि प्रतितरिष्यति तदा गन्धास्ति निवेदम् श्रोतव्यस्य श्रुतस्य च श्रुतिभिप्रतिपन्ना ते यदा स्थास्यति निश्चला समाधावतला बुद्धि तथा योगमवाप्स्यसि अर्जुनवाच स्थितप्रज्ञस्य कामाश समाधिस्तस्य केशव स्थितधी किम् भाषेत किमासीत वृजेत किम् श्रीभगवानवाच సుగ్రహాదీయదాకానాన్ శ్రవణం పరతమనోగతాన్ అత్మనేవాత్మనయాతుష్ట చతుర్ప్రజ్ఞస్తుదోచితే దుఃఖేష్ను దిగ్నమనా సుఖేషు విగత స్పమః దీప్తరాగమయక్రోధ తిపిధీమునరుచ్యతే యః సర్వత్రాన విస్నేహ తత్ర ప్రాప్య శుభాశుభం నామినం నదినం వేష్టి తస్య ప్రజ్ఞా ప్రతిష్ఠిత యదా సంహరతే చాయం కోమోంగాని విసర్శః ఇంద్రియాణీంద్రియార్థేభ్యస్తస్య ప్రజ్ఞా ప్రతిష్ఠిత విషయా వినివర్తంతే యదాహారస్య దేహిన రసవాజం రసోప్యస్య పరం దిత్వా నివర్తతే హేయ పురుషస్య విపశ్చితః ఇంద్రియాణి ప్రమాతీని భవంతి రసభంగనః తాని సర్వాణి సంగమ్య యుక్త ఆసీత్ మత్పరః వశీయస్యేంద్రియాణి తస్య ప్రజ్ఞా ప్రతిష్ఠిత జాయతోప్సయం పుంస సంగస్తేషు ఉపజాయతే సంగాసం జాయతే కామ కామ క్రోధో విజాయతే క్రోధాద్భవతి సమ్మోహ సమ్మోహా స్మృతి వింద్రమః స్మృతిభ్రంశ బుద్ధినాశో బుద్ధినాశ పునశ్చితి రాగద్వేష విముక్తైస్తు విషయా ఇంద్రియాశ్చరం ఆత్మవశ్చై విధేయాత్మా ప్రసాదమధిగచ్చతి ప్రసాదే సర్వదుఃఖానాం హానిరస్యోపజాయతే ప్రసన్నచేతసో యాశు బుద్ధిపాయ ప్రతిష్ఠతే నాస్తి బుద్ధినియుక్తస్య న చాయుక్తస్య భావన న చాభావయత క్షాంతిర్ అశాంతస్య కుతః సుఖం ఇంద్రియాణాం నిచరతాం యన్మనోహనుపధీయతే తదస్య హరతి ప్రజ్ఞాం వాయుర్నాదమివాంసి తస్మాజస్మహావాహో నిగృహీతాని సర్వశః ఇంద్రియాణీంద్రియార్థేభ్యస్తస్య ప్రజ్ఞా ప్రతిష్ఠిత యాని సర్వభూతానాం తస్యాం జాగర్తి సంయమి యస్యాం జాగృతి భూతాని తాని సా పశ్యతో మునే శ్రూయమానం అచలప్రతిష్టం సమోగమాపోద్భవిషంతి యన్వత్ తన్వత్ కామాయం భవిషంతి సర్వే ప్రశాంతి మాప్నోతి న కామకామే ప్రియాయ కామాన్ ఎక్సవా పుమాన్ సరతి నిక్స్మః నిమో నిరహంకార ప్రశాంతి మధిగచ్చతి ఏషాం బ్రహ్మణి స్థితి పాత నయనాం పాపదమూయతి చిత్పాశ్యాంతకాళేపి బ్రహ్మమేవానమిచ్చతి ఓం తత్సత్. The telephone at the end. Does anyone know it? The Sanskrit? Is it? Thank you. Okay, now what do we want to do? That was complete. That was wonderful. Do we want to discuss a certain part of the second chapter? Start with the first verse. Okay. So in this second chapter, Sanjaya explains the situation. Arjun is paralyzed on the battlefield, and he's just had this big argument with Krishna why he shouldn't fight. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjun full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan, Krishna, spoke the following words. Should we read the purport? Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man. And for this purpose, the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in the self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible only when one works without attachment to fruit of results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. So, did we discuss that? Okay. So the first point Prabhupada is making here is that Arjuna was full of compassion. Now this in itself is a good quality, to have compassion. This is on the saintly side of the scale. The demons are more and more, as we were reading yesterday, arrogant, heartless, hard-hearted. They're simply trying to exploit others. So Arjuna, of course, being a devotee, was compassionate. But the whole point of the Gita is that his compassion was now misdirected, is that he was feeling sorry for the soldiers on the other side, which of course is exactly what a Kshatriya is not supposed to do. He can't start feeling his heart melting with compassion for the soldiers on the other side, or he can't fight them. So, and in a higher sense, the whole point of the Kurukshetra war, if you read the Mahabharata, is that it was truly just. It was truly a just war on the part of the Pandavas. They had tried everything. They were cheated out of their kingdom. They were the rightful heirs to the throne. They were cheated out of that. They had been cheated in the gambling match again out of everything, even their wife, and exiled to the forest. And even Krishna had tried to accommodate the situation as a mediator, but they wouldn't even give him enough land to stick a pin in. You see, this was Duryodhana, and his cohort, the Dhritarashtra, was sanctioning this. So this was a completely just war, and he was supposed to fight it. Krishna wanted it for the ultimate good of society, because Dharma would be reinstated in the form of Yudhishthira. But oftentimes, the immediate situation can blind you to the ultimate purpose. And in this case, some painful things have to happen in order for the Dharma to ultimately be reinstated. So Arjuna was feeling compassion, but this compassion was not approved by Krishna. It was misguided. And this speaks to the whole idea of welfare work. What is really good humanitarian work? So many people want to give charity for education, for helping children, starving children, for medical reasons, right? This is good, this is positive, good karma. But it is all ultimately insufficient. The real welfare work is the spreading of Krishna consciousness, because that can solve the problem forever. Prabhupada mentions the drowning man, you know, saving the coat of the drowning man. So everyone is drowning in this ocean of birth and death. So it doesn't help simply to do a little bit of temporary welfare work for the body and leave them continuing to drown in birth and death. Where the real welfare work is to save the person by teaching them the means and method by which they can get out of the ocean altogether. So this is the understanding of this particular verse. Arjuna, he was showing his true soft-hearted devotee nature, but he was bewildered by Krishna, so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. And so we'll now hear as Krishna chastises him first for lamenting what is not worthy to be lamented for. But first we'll have Arjuna's final statement, his soliloquy, so to speak, at the beginning of chapter 2. So any further discussion on these points? If not, we can move on. Next verse. So Lord Krishna says, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy." 4. Krishna and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate in the absolute truth. Absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman, or the impersonal all-pervasive spirit, Paramatma, or the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart of all living entities, and Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11, this conception of the absolute truth is explained thus. Udantita, okay, let's see if we can chant this verse without looking at the page. Whoever knows it, whoever needs to look at the page can. Udantita tatta vidas tattam yam jnanam anvayam brahmeti padamatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. Very good, very important verse. Part of that whole section in the second chapter that we should know practically all of them. But with Savatpunksam Parodharma, ending with Vidyate Vidyagrant, is sort of the next one, either one. It's very, very, I often look at that chapter and I say, knowing the disqualifications of the people of this age, Vyasadeva, Sutta Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami, they put the whole philosophy right there at the beginning. So even if they can't read the whole Bhagavatam, at least they'll get the complete lesson right there. And they can go back to God just by following. So that's why we made a book out of it. You know, the book, Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. That was my idea, to put that book together. And I took all the parts out from the different lectures of Prabhupada. It's a nice book, isn't it? If you read it, it's nice and concise. It gives the whole philosophy. So, the Absolute Truth is realized in three phases of understanding, by the knower of the Absolute Truth, by the knower of the Absolute Truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the Absolute Truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which also has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun's surface, and the sun planet itself. One who studies the sunshine only is the preliminary student. One who understands the sun's surface is further advanced, and one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest. Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness, and the glaring effulgence of the impersonal nature, may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the Absolute Truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal features of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists, who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the Absolute Truth, are the topmost transcendentalists, although all students who are engaged in the study of the Absolute Truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sunshine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another, and yet the students of the three different phases are not in the same category. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all enunciation, is called Bhagavan. Okay, so for some extra credit, let's chant the verse that goes with that. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasakshriya jnanavairagyas chayava shannam bhaga itingana. Very good. A lot of scholars here. There are many persons who are very rich, very powerful, very beautiful, very famous, very learned, and very much detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc., entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of God. No living entity, including Brahma or Shiva or Narayan, can possess opulences as fully as Krishna. Now, why does he say Narayan? Because Narayan, after all, is Krishna. He's making a distinction now between Bhagavan and Narayan, or Krishna and Narayan, anyway. Krishna. Who can explain this? Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam. Which are?
The sound of his flute.
Right, very good. If you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's very nice. He has all the 64 qualities that are in Sanskrit, you know, taken from the Nectar Devotion, from the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu. So if you memorize those, you can see, oh, there's the 50, here's the five, here's the four. So the four special for Krishna is like Sarva Bhuta Chamadkara Lila Kalo Lavare Di Atulya Murada Prema Mandita Sri Mandala. Fidigan Manasakashi Murali Kalakujita Asamanodva Rupa Shri Vismapada Sarasana. So it's a nice way to memorize. He got him right. But this gives like Sarva Adbhuta Chamadkara. So this wonderful Leela, the pastime. You don't find it with Narayan. Like in Vaikuntha, they have activities, but it's not like in Goloka. where you have this ever-increasing waves of varieties of lila in the different rasas, especially the higher rasas, conjugal and sakya ras and parental ras, are not even there in Vaikuntha Narayan, that experience that only dasya ras, right, and shanta. So that's Krishna. He has these and sarva bhuta charakara lila kalola vadadi. He's an ocean full of many waves of pastimes, which are very astounding to all moving and unmoving beings. And then the Trijagan Manasarkarshi, that flute sound can attract the minds of everyone in the universe. Mulali Kalakujita, his wonderful warbling fact of playing of the flute. And then, Mulali Kalakujita, Asama Nordva Rupa Shri Vismapata Charasara. Asama Nordva is a very nice word. Unequaled and unsurpassed. You see? Asama and Urdva. Asama Nordva. Sometimes Asama Urdva. It's a similar thing. Rupa and Shri. So his form, his opulence, his beauty are unequaled and unsurpassed. And they astound the moving and the non-moving living beings. In Vrindavan, you know, even the trees, when Krishna walks in the forest, they also go into ecstasy. You know, have you ever, you remember, I don't know if you've read in, what's you read in Krishna book, describes, he goes, and then the trees start shedding, they suddenly blossom with fruits and flowers, and they start bowing down from the extra weight. And they also, the honey starts flowing out of their beehives, or the sap starts flowing in tears. So even the moving and non-moving, they're also attracted to Krishna. And as mentioned, he's surrounded by this loving circle, especially the gopis, who are at the highest levels of prema bhakti. So therefore, Krishna is unique. He, as they say, Swayam Bhagavan. Etik Chantikala Krishna, Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam. And he has all of these opulences in full. Now Narayan has them, but he doesn't manifest them all. Like Ramchandra, he has them, but he doesn't manifest them in that form. So the Dandakaranya sages, they wanted to have this Khandra relation with Ravi, said, no. In this avatar, incarnation, I have only one wife. You'll have to take birth as gopis, and then you can enjoy it. See? So therefore, we worship Krishna, who is Akalara Sarmatamurti. He can reciprocate any of the rasas. So, going on, he is Supreme God, no living entity, including Brahma, can possess opulence like Krishna. Therefore, it is concluded in the Brahma Samhita by Lord Brahma himself that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to or above him. He is the primeval Lord or Bhagavan, known as Govinda. And he is the supreme cause of all causes. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sabhatanakaranam. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagavan, but Krishna is the supreme because none can excel him. He is the supreme person, and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the primeval Lord Govinda and the cause of all causes. Now this idea of cause of all causes is really important. I don't know how familiar you are with Western theology. Probably not too much, but some of you may be. But there was this philosopher, Thomas Aquinas. They call him St. Thomas Aquinas, who lived, I don't know, 11th, 12th century, something like that. And he formulated philosophy that is now current for the Christians, you know. And he had various definitions of God to try to prove that there is a God. You know, of course, you can't prove it from your material mind, but he had certain ideas which are very close and probably we use them. And especially the idea of the argument from design. This is practically the whole BI, the Bhaktivedanta Institute, is based on this idea, the argument from design. And that is that the tremendous design we see in this world, it's like, probably we often say, even a child can tell, would say, would see that there's a higher intelligence. The scientists have, you know, created a philosophy around the back like this to try to describe, but no, all of this complication in this material world, the sun's rising at the same time, just the right time, the spheres are going. You know, I remember, have you ever seen a full solar eclipse? You may have seen it, or you've seen it on TV, or you know what it is, right? So, with a solar eclipse, according to the astronomers, is that the moon comes between the sun and the earth and just covers the sun, right? And then you see that penumbra, right? You see this, is, and then they take pictures because they can see things that they can't see otherwise. So, even as a kid, as a child, I have, you know, various times when there's a solar eclipse, and then you watch it through the glass or whatever, you know, you want to burn your eyes. I wondered, my God, how could that be? It's just the right size. The moon is just right. If it's bigger, it covers the whole thing. If it's smaller, then you see more sun. There must be somebody who arranged that, right? For it to just cover exactly the size. The distance between the sun and the moon and the earth and the sun, everything has to be just right for that solar eclipse. But even though the scientists study this, they don't come in, there must be a superior intelligence. But actually, as you get deeper down into the, both macro and micro, whether you get down into the paramecia and you get down into the molecules and the atoms, or you go up into the universe and the galaxies, all you see is organization. You see incredible information content, as Sataputra would say. You know, Sataputra is our great mathematician. You know, everyone knows him. So this is the argument from design. Because there is so much design here, if you find a watch on the ground, do you think that it just grew up from the earth by accident? Or that it came, you know, so many dust particles here in Bombay, somehow organized it? No, of course not. Somebody dropped a watch, somebody figured it out. There's an intelligence behind it. So similarly, sarva karana karanam is an important concept. And it means that, of course, Krishna is the cause of all causes. Now, if you look at this world scientifically, what do you find? You find that everything that we experience here is the end result of a series of causes, right? Cause, effect. The effect becomes the cause of the next thing. A big string. If you look at ourselves, we all have our parents. They have their parents. They have their parents holding my bag. And even this room, for instance, right? There's so many causes. We can count them. The materials themselves are a kind of cause. Right? Without the stone, without the marble and the lights, whatever, there's no room. But that they can't assemble themselves. So a more important part of the cause is the intelligence of the builder, right?
And the builders. So you put it
all together and you have the causes that have produced this effect. There's nothing in this effect that it wasn't there in the causes. You understand what I'm saying? Everything that's here in this room
was
the result of a string of causes. Material cause, intellectual, the blueprints, the whole thing. Right? Different energies came together. But there's nothing here that wasn't there. The idea and the architect, the blueprint, that was all preliminary, and that has to come out, you see, in this. So similarly, whatever we find here in terms of relationship, love, emotion, beauty, you know, must be there in the original cause. There can't be anything here that's not there. And that's why we say, this is a reflection of the reality. If we find love here, we must find it there in its perfection, in Krishna Lila. If we find some beautiful flower, it must be there in its perfection. The archetype, the exemplar, is there. So this phrase, sarva karana karanam, is essential to understand what Bhagavan really is. When we say janma yasya yataha in the Vedanta Sutra, the Brahman is that from which everything has come, expands into this idea of sarva karana karanam. And also an Adi Govana. He has no beginning. There's no cause for Krishna. He's the uncaused cause. But he is the Adi of everything else. An Adi Govana. So this is a very good preaching point.
People want to know, show me God.
He said, just look around you. There's so much evidence of God, of the transcendental intelligence. You just have to open your eyes and you can see everywhere evidence for the presence of Supreme Intelligence. Okay, any discussion on these points? Very important preaching point, but I would use it all the time. Moving along, in the Bhagavad Gita also there is a list of many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna is described as the original personality of Godhead, from whom many, many incarnations and personalities of Godhead expand. Ete chamsa kala kripunsa, let's stand together. Ete chamsa kala punsa, Krishna stu Bhagavan swayam. Indari Vyakulam Lokam Vridayanti Yuge Yuge. All the lists of the incarnations of Godhead submitted herewith are either plenary expansions or parts of the plenary expansions of the Supreme Godhead. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Bhagavatam 1.3.28. Okay, I don't want to seem like a sissy, but can we turn up the air conditioning? It's on. Turn it up. It's like if you come to dance, you might as well dance. You've got your air conditioning? So let's Put it on. It's on. That one's on. All right, let's go for it. I'll contribute a few hundred rupees for the electricity. Let's see. Therefore, Krishna is the original supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, the source of both the super soul and the impersonal Brahman. In the presence of the supreme personality of Godhead, Arjuna's lamentation for his kinsman is certainly unbecoming, and therefore Krishna expressed his surprise with the word kutaha, where from? Such impurities were never expected from a person belonging to the civilized class of men known as the Aryans. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. Persons who are led by the material conception of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of the Absolute Truth, Vishnu or Bhagavan, and they are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore they do not know what liberation is. Persons who have no knowledge of liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans. Although Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight. This act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans. Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it even give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen. So there's a lot in this purport. Right, you see, right off the bat, you know, Prabhupada is putting it, Krishna is God. He's the Supreme Personality of God. This whole Bhagavad Gita is based on that. If you read the introduction, you will see that he says, or the preface, is that at least theoretically, you should accept that Krishna is the Personality of God. Then you can really get something out of the Gita. If you approach the Gita and say, well, that's an interesting cultural, you know, manifestation. How does that relate to this other book? In other words, you're not really accepting these as the words of God, then everything becomes relative. You cannot really benefit from the Bhagavad Gita. So that's why this is called Bhagavad Gita as it is. Prabhupada's faith, it comes out of every purport. This is why these purports are so powerful. There's no doubt here. If you simply, you know, read the purports, you can easily see Prabhupada is speaking with authority. There's no maybe, someone says this, someone says that. It's all, okay, this is what Bhagavan says. Krishna is Bhagavan. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's go on from there. You see? So this is the strength of these books, not only Bhagavad Gita, but the other books, is that Prabhupada is speaking from a platform of realization. You know? And so the books have tremendous potency to enlighten us. Okay, so let's see. That's the idea of the Aryans. Now, we're getting a little far away from World War II. And so many people don't know the history. But, you know, Hitler, he ruined this word. You know, he claimed to be the Aryans. Right? Oh, that's Germanic. You know? But what's the definition? You know, who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. Sorry, it's not Nazi Germany. You know, that was not. It was just the opposite. Totally demonic. And the demons like to appropriate the language of the godly. You know, they like to do that because then they create confusion. And they, you see, so this is what Hitler did. Even the swastika. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? He appropriated that. He was, you know, he had some knowledge of the Eastern things, and he was totally nuts. But he, you know, he was nuts in a way that caused a lot of harm. You know? Crazy. So swasti, what does swasti mean? Have you ever thought of that? Suasti. Su-asti is the origin of swastika. Means, be good, right? Welfare for you, isn't it? It's an auspicious symbol. Swastika. Swasti. You'll see it in the Bhagavatam. So, su-asti, the last thing that it could mean was a swastika, you know, as a symbol for Blitzkrieg and the Nazi regime. Just the opposite. But now that it's getting far away, you know, gradually the word Aryan is being revived by Prabhupada for its real meaning. So, you're Aryans, I'm Lecha, Aishir. You guys really are Aryans. So you're coming back to your real quality. But it doesn't really matter where you're born. It's a question of what kind of a life you lead. If your life is centered on spiritual realization and you're dedicated to reestablishing a spiritual civilization, then you're part of the Aryan culture. So So Arjuna was doing just what was not necessary. In other words, he was subverting Krishna's plan, which was to reinstitute the Aryan culture, and the gurus who were misappropriated. And so Arjuna was acting in a non-Aryan way, and this is an insult. See, Krishna is speaking here as a kshatriya to kshatriya. He's not yet speaking as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's saying, he's trying to fire up Arjuna, and say, the next one is even worse, Glaibhyama. How has this impotence come upon you? The kshatriya is very proud of his strength, his potency. Now, how is this impotence? It's like the eunuchs will do this, So this is trying to fire him up on that direction, but it doesn't work. Arjuna still says, no, I'd rather go begging, and like that. You'll see from the verses that come. So then, finally, Arjuna surrenders, and the whole thing changes. Now it's guru-disciple. You see? Now it's still friend-to-friend. One kshatriya to another say, don't be a coward. Don't be a non-Aryan. Get back on the battlefield. But this doesn't work with Arjuna. Arjuna needs to have the words of God as the guru finally enlighten him. So this is a whole preliminary to the actual beginning of the instruction in text 11. Okay, yes, Prabhu.
Let you give the explanation of swastika. Is there any similar explanation from some Vedic scripture about RS Vedic code? Somebody like if there is an idea that RS came from Europe.
Right, the Indo-European thing. I can't think of it offhand. I mean, Prabhupada explains this word in other places in his books, and this may be in the Vedas. The more description of what it means to be an Aryan. But the basic principle, just like we have Brahman. What is a Brahman? Doesn't mean just born in a Brahman family. It's guna and karma. So similarly, Aryan is guna and karma. Your qualities and how you act. That's whether you are an Aryan. It's not just a racial thing. This was what the Germans tried to do. It was racial. We're the Aryan race. We're blonde and, blue-eyed. And there's the Jews, kill the Jews. They're not Aryans. That's gross ignorance, motive ignorance. Prabhupada, and Krishna speaks of that in the 18th chapter, right? Samo namas tabakshaucham, chantar acham evacha, jnana vijnanam astikyam, brahma karma svabhavajam. It's the activities. And from svabhava, they're born with them. But you can cultivate these qualities, and then you're recognized as a Brahman, if you have the qualities. So similarly, Aryan, there are more extensive descriptions, but basically it's, as Prabhupada describes here, and you can say that it's really Brahminical culture, in its essence. And so you have to see what are the qualities and what are the activities, and then someone can be said to be an Aryan.
What argument should you give somebody says that Indo-Aryan, because that is taught in the basic history.
Well, the best thing I can do is to refer you to a wonderful essay that was written, I think it was some scholar who was favorable to the movement. Have you ever seen this interactive Bhagavad Gita on disc? You ever seen that? You've seen it. It's I think a DVD, or maybe it's just a CD. CD-ROM. And it was put together by Nitya Tripta, Mataji, over several years, and she put a lot of interesting things in there, and some devotees haven't explored it. But in that CD, there's some text, essays, and there's one that deals with this idea of the Indo-Aryan invasion, and it basically poo-poos the whole idea. So you can refer to that and find it there. And there are many more things. You can write to Judah Karma. He's dealing with that every day. Jhutakarma Prabhu, the Michael Cremo. Yeah. And he's working, this is his main focus now, is the history. You're working out the history of India and Vedic history, what it really means. And there are all kinds of proofs that whole invasion thing was just like a concoction of the British, They didn't want to, they wanted to degrade India, and think that, it was just a bunch of aborigines here. And the real value came from Europe. That was the whole idea, right? So they concocted all this evidence and this and that. It's been blown out of the water, pretty much. Is that there is this ancient culture here that was already here, as we read. It goes ancient beyond time. So there is evidence. I don't have it at the tip of my brain, but there are many nice essays. And if you're armed with that, then you can come back.
What is exactly the plenary expansion?
Oh, plenary expansion. Okay. Now, there's a plenary and the partial, right? So plenary literally means full. Full. So plenary expansion of Krishna, Paramatma, is plenary expansion. Krishna in full, is it not? Now, even though you may be a plenary expansion, you may not display all those activities, all those qualities. Rama is plenary, but he doesn't show all the qualities of Krishna. Same in Varaha, Kurma, they're all Krishna. They're all Vishnu, Vishnu Tattva. The same idea is there with Amsha and, Vibhu and Amsha. Vibhuat, expansion, means the complete expansion, and the Amsha. We're also Amsha. We're in the nature of energy, you see. So the separated minute expansions, they're partial, you know, to one degree or another. Even Brahma is partial. But all the Vishnu tattvas, they're all plenary. You see? Now, this is the actual meaning of it. Sometimes Prabhupada is a little loose with the vocabulary, you have to see. But generally, that's what it means. You know, the plenary expansion. So all the Vishnu tattvas, the Paramatma, they're all plenary, meaning they're full Krishna. But they don't always show everything. Only Krishna himself shows all of these six tattvas in full. That's the meaning. Okay? Kana is like a particle. Kana means generally like
kala.
Yeah, kala is generally a synonym for plenary, I think. But it doesn't show them.
Expansion of an expansion.
That's if it's plenary, it still has the full power. You see, just like we have Balaram, right? And it expands into Chaturvyuha. And then from the Sankarshan comes Narayan, from Narayan the second Chaturvyuha, right? And then comes Mahavishnu, from Mahavishnu Garbhadaksha, then the Shiradaksha. But all of them are plenary. Mahavishnu is also Krishna. They all have the power, but they have certain special functions. Mahavishnu doesn't do the rasa dance. He just sleeps and he emanates, you know, and the glance, right? And same thing with the other Purusha avatars. But we should know that they're full Krishna. But then there are others who aren't full Krishna, but they manifest some of the power. Just like you have Shaktivesh. You know, Shaktivesh means invested with potency. And they can act very powerfully. We accept Prabhupada as a Shaktivesh. I once went to Navadvip. This was right after Prabhupada disappeared. It was like, you know, the 20th of November, 1977. And we had... gone around Govardhan Hill with the first Murti. I arrived in Vrindavan on November 16th. You know, that day. I was heading, and we got delayed. And then we had a ceremony, and then we went to Mayapur to put the Pushpa Samadhi, which has now grown up on top of all those flowers. So I was there for the, you know, installation. And then I had heard that Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Rakshakshya Sridhar Maharaj, had a proof that Prabhupada was a Shaktivesh avatar. Now, in those days, I was working for Back to Godhead. So in the capacity of a reporter for BTG, I went across the river, you know, to visit Sridhar Maharaj in his mosque. And there was a Kinchana Krishna's Babaji was there also. And so I was definitely the first one to go. No one else had gone before. And so they said, yes, come up, you know, and how can we have you? I said, I heard proof that you have Prabhupada Shaktivesh. He said, yes, the proof is there. The proof is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the proof was Krishna Shakti Bina Nahita Prabhatan. That the Sankirtan is the Dharma of the age. And without the Shakti of Krishna, you cannot spread Harinama all over the world. Prabhupada spread Harinama over the world, therefore you must have Krishna Shakti, therefore Shakti Vesh. Perfect proof, it's true. So that empowered incarnation is most accessible to us. And we should also understand we can also become empowered to one degree or another. We may not come to the level of incarnation, but we can also be empowered by surrendering. The more we surrender, the more empowered we are. It's like Arjun, totally empowered. He's a jiva, of course, eternal associate of Krishna, but he was empowered to do this battle and win the war. Okay, should we go on? Now, he gets really heavy. Klaibhyam Maasvagama Parta. O son of Pita, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and rise oh, chastise of the enemy. I knew a devotee, a Sankirtan devotee, who would always read this verse before going out on Sankirtan. Yes, there you are. Fight the battle. It's just like being on a battlefield, isn't it? He would take inspiration from this verse. Arjuna was addressed as the son of Pita, who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudev. Therefore, Arjuna had a blood relationship with Krishna as a cousin. If the son of a Kshatriya declines to fight, he is a Kshatriya in name only. And if the son of a Brahmin acts impiously, he is a Brahmin in name only. So there's a word. You ever hear this? Dharma Dwaji. You know, you have the flag of the Dharma or Brahmin Dwaji, but it's only the flag. It's, in other words, it's external. So let's not be Dharma Dwajis. We have to be truly pious. Such Kshatriyas and Brahmins are unworthy sons of their fathers. Therefore, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was directly guiding him on the chariot. But in spite of all these credits, if Arjuna abandoned the battle, he would be committing an infamous act.
Therefore, Krishna
said that such an attitude in Arjuna did not fit his personality. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives. But Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. Such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. Therefore, such magnanimity or so-called nonviolence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna. Okay, any discussion on these points? Now, all of this doesn't work, as we'll see from the next verse, the next few verses. This argument is not going to work with Arjuna. He's too much torn. He's got this existential, ontological problem because he's all of his worshipful, his guru is there, Dronacharya, the worshipful grandfather, Bhishma, all of his relatives, you know, and he's thinking, as he did in the first, oh, if I kill them, then I'll be performing great sin, the wives will become polluted. You know, all he can see is that. He knows the duty is there, but all of this is like in his way. It's just in his heart, and it will not be cleared by this ordinary talk as we see him. Alright, going on. Arjunavacha. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona, who are worthy of my worship? Report. Respectable superiors like Bhishma and the grandfather and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they attack, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counterattack them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather, Ugrasen, or his teacher, Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. But we should remember that these elders had become disqualified by sitting silently when Draupadi was being threatened and disrobed. So they had a kind of a cloud hanging over them. They were kind of doomed from that point on. And ultimately they will be killed. Of course, their deaths are all glorious because they're killed in the battle in Krishna's presence. And we know Bhishma Dev, especially, he was so exalted, his prayers in the Bhagavatam are conclusive, and he had Krishna by his side. But still, Arjuna was thinking he wouldn't attack them on this level. Okay, should we move on? It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. Report. According to scriptural codes, a teacher who engages in an abominable action and has lost his sense of discrimination is fit to be abandoned. Bhishma and Drona were obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because of his financial assistance, although they should not have accepted such a position simply on financial considerations. Under the circumstances, they have lost the respectability of teachers. So this is another reason. They kind of sold out. But Arjuna thinks that nevertheless, they remain his superiors, and therefore to enjoy material profits after killing them would mean to enjoy spoils tainted with blood. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them, if we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Report. Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of the Kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live by begging. If he didn't conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence. Nor was there a certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them and their cause was justified, still, if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. All these considerations by Arjuna definitely proved that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened and had complete control over his mind and senses. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was truly virtuous, as these qualities, combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge. And without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. Arjuna was competent in all these attributes, over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships. So Prabhupada has now kind of changed the whole view of it. He's saying that that Arjuna's soft-heartedness here is a sign of detachment. So in one sense, see, because Arjuna is, after all, the cousins, all these Kurus are his cousins. They're the sons of Dhritarashtra. He's the son of Pandu, brothers.
So they're
blood relatives, and he's forgiving them. This is one of the qualities of the Vaishnava, is that he forgives. He doesn't really hold a grudge. Holding a grudge will definitely harm and ultimately can destroy your whole devotional kripa. So devotees
tend to just
forgive, isn't it? That's the idea. Forgiving and gentle and humble. And so Arjuna, although he's a Kshatriya,
he has those qualities. So these natural
qualities are fighting against his duty. This is his dilemma, right? His natural quality of kind-heartedness. And he says, who cares? Let me go, you know, to the forest. He's thinking, I'll enjoy this kingdom, but it'll be saturated with the blood of those who I love. So what's the point? You know? So he's thinking, he's not thinking that this will be satisfying to Krishna. He's just thinking what the material situation will be.
So that's his argument here.
Is that if I conquer them, I'll enjoy, but it'll be saturated with blood. If they conquer me, then, you know, that's better. He's thinking that's even a better situation. So I'll just go off to the forest and give it up. So this is the preliminary, and now the key verse is text 7, where finally he gives up all of this stuff. He says, I have no idea. I'm really puzzled. I'm totally confused. You direct me. That's the key sign of any surrender. When we really take spiritual life seriously, we recognize we don't know what to do properly. You know, we've tried. I mean, this is what happened to me. I tried this, I tried that, tried this, tried that, and it was always a failure.
Even spiritually.
You know, you can read so many books and not know what to do. Well, you do some of what is right, and then you do something wrong. So you really need a guide. You have to have a guide. That's why in the first process of bhakti given by Bhakti Samda Sindhu, Ado Guru Parashriyam, surrender unto the realized soul. And then
suddenly
everything kind of falls into place. And that's what's going to happen for Arjuna. And the first step, of course, is to get nicely chastised, you know, and put in your place so you become humble, and then you can receive the knowledge nicely. Right? That's what happens. So, any questions on these preliminaries? When do we go to? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. We already go. Yeah, that, now comes the real key verse. So then you can discuss that amongst yourselves. Thank you, Prabhus. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Oh, wait a minute. We forgot the most important part. We have to take a photo. Right? Collect a photo. So, from my memory bank here. No, we're going to...